Eri was full out against the third drow by this time, the dark elf's twin swords working frantically to keep the assassin's sword and dagger at bay. The assassin wanted the battle over quickly, and his routines were purely offensive, designed to score a fast kill. But this drow, a longtime soldier of Bragan the Earth, was no novice to battle, and he half-twisted and spun complete circles, fell into a backward roll, and pumped his swords hand over hand in a blinding wall of defense. And Treri growled in dismay but kept up the pressure, hoping his adversary would make even the slightest mistake. Drizzt found himself squared off against two, and one of these smiled wickedly as he lifted a small crossbow in his free hand. Drizzt proved the quicker, though, angling his scimitar right in front of the weapon so that when the drow fired, the quarrel skipped off the blade and flew harmlessly high. The drow threw the hand crossbow at Drizzt, forcing the ranger back long enough so that he could draw a dirk to complement the slender sword he carried. The other drow seized the apparent advantage as Drizzt ducked away, his broadsword and short sword weaving viciously. Metal rang against metal a dozen times, two dozen, as Drizzt impossibly defeated each attack. Then the second drow joined the melee, and Drizzt, as skilled as he was, found himself sorely pressed. Twinkle snapped across to block the short sword, darted farther ahead and low to knock down the tip of the thrusting broadsword, then rifled back the other way, barely deflecting the darting dirk. So it went for several long and frantic moments, with the two soldiers of Bragan the Earth working in harmony, each measuring his attacks in light of the others, each raising appropriate defenses whenever his companion seemed vulnerable. Drizzt was not so sure he could win against these two, and knew that even if he did, this battle would take a long time to turn his way. He glanced over his shoulder to see Entreri beginning to back off from his attack routines, falling into a more mundane rhythm against his skilled opponent. The assassin noticed Drizzt, and apparently noted Drizzt's predicament. He gave a slight nod, and Drizzt caught a subtle shift in the way Entreri was holding his jeweled dagger. Drizzt went forward in a sudden burst, driving back the sword and dirk wielder, then spun to the other drow, scimitars starting low and sweeping upward, forcing the drow's broadsword high. Drizzt released the move immediately, snapped his scimitars from the blade of the broadsword, and skipped two steps backward. The enemy drow, not understanding, kept his broadsword high for another instant, an instant too long, before he began his countering advance. The jewels of Entreri's dagger gave a multicolored flicker as the weapon cut through the air, thudding into the vulnerable drow's ribs below his raised sword arm. He grunted and hopped to the side, crashed against the wall, but kept his balance and kept both his swords defensively out in front. His comrade came ahead immediately, understanding what Drizzt would do. Long sword darted low, darted high, then came up in a twirl for a high slice. Drizzt blocked again, then ducked under the predictably high third attack and veered to the side, both his blades working in sudden short snaps that opened the defenses of the slumping, wounded drow. One scimitar jabbed into drow flesh just beside the dagger, the other followed at once, sinking deeper, finishing the job. Instinctively, Drizzt threw his retracted blade out horizontally and up high, the metal singing a perfect note as it stopped the overhead chop from the second drow's descending sword. The dark elf battling Entreri went on the offensive as soon as the assassin relinquished his dagger. Twin swords worked Entreri's remaining blade high and low, to one side then the other. When he had prepared the assassin's stance to his liking, thinking the end at hand, the drow came with a straight double thrust, both swords parallel and knifing in at the assassin. Entreri's sword hit one, then the other, impossibly fast, knocking both attacks wide. He hit the sword on his right a second time with a backhand, nearly sending the blade from the drow's hand, then a third time, his sword driving his enemies high. Drizzt's second scimitar came free of the dead drow's chest, but Drizzt did not bring the blade to bear on his present opponent. Rather, he angled the tip under the crosspiece of the stuck dagger, and when he saw Entreri prepared to receive it, he jerked his blade around, sending the dagger flying across the way. Entreri caught it with his free hand and redirected its momentum, sticking it into his opponent's exposed ribs under the high-riding swords. The assassin jumped back. The dying drow stared at him in disbelief. What a pitiful sight, Entreri thought, watching his enemy try to lift swords with arms that no longer had any strength. He shrugged callously as the drow toppled to the floor and died. One against one, the remaining drow soon realized that he was no match for Drizzt Do'Urden. He kept his movements defensive, angling around to Drizzt's side, then noticed a desperate opportunity. Sword working furiously to keep the darting scimitars at bay, he flipped his dirk over in his hand as if to throw. Drizzt immediately went into defensive maneuvers, one scimitar flashing across any possible missile path while the other kept the pressure on. But the enemy warrior glanced to the side, to the halfling, sprawled helpless on the floor not so far away. "Surrender, or I kill the halfling," the evil dark elf cried in the drow tongue. Drizzt's lavender eyes flared wickedly. A scimitar hit the evil drow's wrist, taking the dirk from his grasp. Drizzt's other blade batted the sword once, then darted low, slicing against his enemy's knee. Twinkle came across in a blue flash, batting aside the descending sword, and straight ahead came the free, low-riding scimitar, taking the drow in the thigh. The doomed dark elf grimaced and wobbled, trying to back away, trying to utter something, some word of surrender to call off his attacker. But his threat against Regis had put Drizzt past the point of reasoning. Drizzt's advance was slow and deadly even. Scimitars low to his side, he still got one or the other up to destroy any attempted strikes long before they got near his body. All that Drizzt's opponent could watch was Drizzt's simmering eyes, and nothing this drow had ever before seen, neither the snake-headed whips of merciless priestesses nor the rage of a matron mother had promised death so completely. He ducked his head, screamed aloud, and giving in to his terror, threw himself forward desperately. Scimitars hit him alternately in the chest. Twinkle took his biceps cleanly, keeping his sword arm helplessly pinned back, and Drizzt's other blade came up fast under his chin, lifting his face, that he might, at the moment of his death, look once more into those lavender eyes. Drizzt, his chest heaving with the rush of adrenaline, his eyes burning from inner fires, shoved the corpse away and looked to the side, eager to be done with his business with Entreri. But the assassin was nowhere to be seen. Chapter 19. Sacrifice. Thibaldorf Puente stood at the end of the narrow tunnel, scanning the wide cavern beyond with his infravision, registering the shifting gradations of heat, that he might better understand the layout of the dangerous area ahead. He made out the many teeth of the ceiling, stalactites long and narrow, and saw two distinctly cooler lines indicating ledges on the high walls, one directly ahead, the other along the wall on his right. Dark holes lined the walls at floor level in several places. Puente knew that one immediately to his left, two directly across from where he stood, and another diagonally ahead and to the right, under the ledge, likely were long tunnels, and figured several others to be smaller side chambers or alcoves. Guinevere was at the battle rager's side. The cat's ears flattened, its low growl barely perceptible. The panther sensed the danger, too, Puente realized. He motioned for Guinevere to follow him. Suddenly, he was not so upset at having so unusual a companion, and he skittered back down the corridor into the approaching torchlight to stop the others short of the room.
"There'll be at least three or four more ways in or out," the battle rager told his companions gravely, "and lots of open ground across the place."
He went on to give a thorough description of the chamber, paying particular attention to the many obvious hiding spots. Brunner, sharing Puente's dark fears, nodded and looked to the others. He too felt that their enemies were near, were all about them, and had been steadily closing in. The dwarf king looked back the way they had come, and it was obvious to the others that he was trying to figure out some other way around this region.
"We can turn their hoped-for surprise against them," Catti Bree offered, knowing the futility of Brunner's hopes.
The companions had precious little time to spare, and few of the side tunnels they had passed offered little promise of bringing them to the lower regions, or to wider tunnels where they might find Drizzt. A sparkle of battle lust came into Brunner's dark eyes, but he frowned a moment later when Guinevar plopped down heavily at Catti Bree's feet.
"The cat's been about too long," the young woman reasoned. "Guinevar's needing a rest soon."
Wulfgar's and the dwarves' expressions showed that they did not welcome the news.
"More the reason to go straight ahead,"
Catti Bree said determinedly.
"Gwen's got a bit of the fight left, don't ye doubt?"
Brunner considered the words, then nodded grimly and slapped his many-notched axe across his open palm.
"Gotta get in close to this enemy,"
he reminded his friends. Pwent produced his bitter potion.
"Take another hit,"
he offered to Catti Bree and Wulfgar.
"Got to make sure the stuff's fresh in your belly."
Catti Bree winced, but she did take the flask, then handed it to Wulfgar, who similarly frowned and took a brief draw. Brunner and Pwent squatted to the floor between them, Pwent quickly scratching a rough map of the chamber. They had no time for detailed plans, but Brunner sorted out areas of responsibility, assigning each person the task best suited to his or her battle style. The dwarf could give no specific directions to Guinevar, of course, and didn't bother to include Pwent in much of the discussion, knowing that once the fighting began, the battle rager would go off on his wild, undisciplined way. Catti Bree and Wulfgar, too, realized Pwent's forthcoming role, and neither complained, understanding that, against skilled and precise opponents such as drow elves, a little chaos could well be a good thing. They kept the torch burning, even lit a second one, and started cautiously ahead, ready to put the fight on their own terms. As the torchlight breached the room, a darting black form cut through, going into the darkness in full flight. Guinevar broke to the right, cut left toward the center of the chamber, then darted right again toward the back wall. From somewhere ahead there came the sound of firing crossbows, followed by the skip of quarrels hitting the stone, always one step behind the dodging, leaping panther. Guinevar veered again at the last moment, leaped and turned sidelong, paws running along the vertical wall for several strides, before the panther had to come back to the floor. The cat's target, the high ledge on the right-hand wall, was now in sight, and Guinevar ran full out, speeding for it recklessly. At the base, in full stride, and apparently soaring toward a head-first collision, the panther's muscles subtly shifted. Guinevar's direction change was almost perpendicular, the panther flying, seeming to run straight up the 20-foot expanse to the ledge. The three dark elves atop the ledge could not have expected the incredible maneuver. Two fired their crossbows Guinevar's way and fell back into a tunnel. The third, having the misfortune to be directly in the leaping panther's path, could only throw his arms up as the panther fell over him. Torches flew into the room, lighting the battle area, followed by the leading charge of Brunner, flanked on his right by Wulfgar and on his left by Thibbledorf Pwent. Catti Bree quietly filtered in behind them, slipping to the side along the same general course Guinevar had taken, her bow readied and in hand. Again the crossbows of unseen dark elves clicked, and all of the leading companions took hits. Wulfgar felt the venom streaming into his leg, but felt the tingling burn as Pwent's potent potion counteracted its sleepy effects. A darkness spell fell over one of the torches, defeating its light, but Wulfgar was ready, lighting a third and tossing it far to the side. Pwent noticed an enemy drow in the tunnel to the left, and off he went, predictably, roaring with every charging stride. Brunner and Wulfgar slowed, but kept their course straight across the room, for the largest tunnel entrance is across the way. The barbarian caught sight of the flicker of drow eyes along the remaining ledge, farther ahead and above the tunnels. He stopped, twirled, and heaved his warhammer with a cry to his god. Aegis Fang went in low, crushing the lip of the walkway, smashing stone apart. One dark elf leaped away to another point on the long ledge. The other tumbled down, his leg blasted, and barely caught the stone halfway down the crumbling wall. Wulfgar did not follow the throw forward. He got hit again by a stinging quarrel and rushed instead to the side, to the remaining tunnel, along the right-hand wall wherein crouched a pair of dark elves. Eager to join in close combat, Brunner veered behind the barbarian. The dwarf looked back before he had even completed the turn, though, as an eight-legged monster, the Drider, came out of the tunnel directly ahead, other dark forms shifting about behind it. With a whoop of delight, never considering the odds now that he and his friends were committed to the battle, the fiery dwarf veered again to his initial course, determined to meet the enemy, however many there might be, head-on. It took all the discipline Catti Bree could muster to hold her first shot in check. She really didn't have a good angle for either those that Puent had pursued or the ledge where Guinevere had gone, and she didn't think it worth the trouble to spike the wounded drow hanging helplessly below the blasted ledge, not yet. Brunner had bade her to make certain that her first shot, the one shot she might get before she was fully noticed, counted. The eager young woman watched the split between Brunner and Wulfgar and found her opportunity. A drow, crouching behind a 4-foot diagonal jag in the back wall, almost exactly halfway between her rushing companions, leaned out, crossbow in hand. The dark elf fired, then fell back in surprise as a silver arrow streaked past him, skipped off the stone, and left a smoldering scorch in its wake. Catti Bree's second shot was in the air an instant later. She could no longer see the drow, fully covered by the stone, but she did not believe his cover so thick. The arrow hit the jutting slab 2 feet from its edge, 2 feet from where it joined the wall. There came a sharp crack as the rock split, followed by a grunt as the arrow blasted deep into the dying drow's skull. The prone dark elf on the high ledge scrambled and kicked, kept his buckler above him, and managed somehow to get his dagger out with his other hand. Only his fine mesh armor kept Guinevere's raking claws somewhat at bay, kept his mounting wounds serious but not mortal. He brought the dagger to bear on the panther's flank, but the weapon seemed small against such a foe, seemed only to further enrage the cat. His buckler arm was batted aside, back up over his head with enough force to dislocate his shoulder. He tried to get it back to block, but found it would not respond to his mind's frantic call. He scrambled to put his other hand in the great paw's way, a futile defense. Guinevere's claws took his scalp line just above his forehead. The drow plunged the dagger in again, praying for a quick kill. The panther's claws sheared off his face. Crossbows clicked again from down the tunnel at the back of the narrow ledge. Not really hurt, the panther came off its victim and loped ahead in pursuit. The two dark elves summoned globes of darkness between them and the cat, turned and fled. If they had looked back, they might have rejoined the fight, for Guinevere's pursuit was not dogged. With the dagger and quarrel wounds, the insidious sleep poison, and the simple duration of the panther's visit to the plain, Guinevere's energy was no more. The cat did not wish to leave, wanted to stay and fight beside the companions, to stay to hunt for its missing master. The magic of the figurine would not support the desires, though. A few strides into the darkened area, Guinevere stopped, barely holding a tentative balance. Panther flesh dissolved into gray smoke. The planar tunnel opened and beckoned. He got hit again as he exited the chamber, but the tiny quarrel did no more than bring a smile to the most wild battle rager's contorted face. A darkness glow blocked his flight, but he roared and barreled through, smiling even when he collided full force with a winding wall out the other side. The amazed dark elf, watching ferocious Puent's progress, spun away, darting along the tunnel, then turned a sharp corner. Puent came right behind, armor squealing and drool running from his fat lips in lines down his thick black beard.
"Stupid!"
he yelled, ducking his head as he spun the corner right behind the fleeing drow, fully expecting the ambush. Puent's darting helmet spike intercepted the sword cut, impaling his enemy through the forearm. The battle rager didn't slow, but hurled himself into the air and lay out flat, body blocking his opponent across the chest and driving the drow to the ground under him. Glove nails dug for the dark elf's groin and face. Puent's ridged armor creased the fine mesh mail as he went into a series of violent convulsions. With each of the battle rager's movements, waves of searing agony ran up the drow's impaled arm. Brunner noticed the slender form of a drow, wearing an outrageously wide-brimmed and plumed hat, moving about the entrance to the tunnel. Then came the flicker of objects cutting into the torchlight from behind the monstrous drider, and Brunner threw his shield up defensively. A dagger banged against the metal, then another and a third behind that. The fourth throw came in low, scraping the dwarf's shin. The fifth dipped over the leaning shield as Brunner inevitably bent forward, cutting a line across the dwarf's scalp under the edge of his one-horned helmet. But minor wounds would not slow Brunner, nor would the sight of the bloated drider, axes waving, eight legs clacking and scrabbling. The dwarf came in hard, took a hit on the shield, and returned with a smash against the drider's second descending axe. Much smaller than his opponent, Brunner worked low, his axe smacking the hard exoskeleton of the drider's armored legs. All the while, the dwarf remained a blur of frenzied motion, his shield above him, as fine a shield as was ever forged, deflecting hit after hit from the wickedly edged, drow-enchanted weapons. Brunner's axe dove into the wedge between two legs, cracking through to the drider's fleshy interior. The dwarf's smile was short-lived, though, for the drider's responses banged hard on the shield, twisting it about on Brunner's arm, and the creature put a leg in line and kicked hard into the dwarf's belly, throwing Brunner back before his axe could do any real damage. He squared off, his breath lost and his arm aching. Again came a series of dagger throws from the corridor behind the drider, forcing Brunner off balance. He barely got his shield up to stop the last four. He looked down to the first, jutting from the front of his layered armor, a trickle of blood oozing from behind its tip, and knew he had escaped death by a hair's breadth. He knew, too, that the distraction would cost him dearly, for he was no longer squared up for melee, and the drider was upon him. Wolfgar's flying hammer led the way to the corridor, his one throw more than matching the crossbow darts that struck the roaring barbarian. He aimed high, for the stalactite teeth hanging above the entryway, and his mighty hammer did its work perfectly, smashing apart several of the hanging rocks. One dark elf fell back. Wolfgar could not tell if the falling stone had crushed him or not, and the other dove forward, drawing sword and dagger and coming up in the chamber to meet the unarmed barbarian's charge. Wolfgar skidded to a stop short of the flashing blades, skipped to the side and kicked out, punched out, doing anything to keep the dangerous and quick opponent at bay for the few seconds the barbarian needed. The drow, not understanding the magic of Aegis Fang, took his time, seemed in no hurry to chance the grasp of the obviously mighty human. He came with a measured combination, sword, dagger, and dagger again, the last thrust painfully nicking the barbarian's hip. The drow smiled wickedly. Aegis Fang appeared in Wolfgar's waiting hands. With one hand, grasping low on the warhammer's handle, Wolfgar sent the weapon into a flowing circular motion in front of him. The drow took careful measure of the weapon's speed. Wolfgar carefully appraised the drow's examination. In darted the dagger, behind the flowing hammer. Wolfgar's other hand clapped against the handle, just under his weapon's head, and abruptly reversed the direction, parrying the drow's attack aside. The drow was quick, snapping his sword in a downward angle for Wolfgar's shoulder, even as his dagger hand was knocked wide. Wolfgar's huge forearm flexed with the strain as he halted the heavy hammer's flow, snapping it back up in front of him. He caught Aegis Fang halfway up the handle with his free hand and jabbed diagonally up, the warhammer's solid head intercepting the sword and driving it harmlessly away. The end of the parry left the drow with one arm wide and low, the other wide and high, and left Wulfgar standing before his opponent in perfect balance, both hands grasping Aegis Fang. Before the dark elf could recover his wide flying blades, before he could set his feet to dive away, Wulfgar chopped him, the hammer crunching under his shoulder and driving down toward his opposite hip. The drow fell back from the blow then, as though the full weight of the incredible hit had not immediately registered, went into an involuntary backward hop that slammed him against the wall. One leg buckling, one lung collapsed, the drow brought his sword horizontally before his face in a meager defense. Hands low on the handle, Wulfgar brought the hammer up behind him and slammed it home with all his strength, through the blade and into the drow's face. With a sickening crack, the drow's skull exploded, crushed between the unyielding stone of the wall and the unyielding metal of the mighty Aegis Fang. A blinding streak of silver halted the Drider's attacks and saved Brunner Battlehammer. The arrow didn't hit the Drider, however. It soared high, pegging the wounded drow, who had just about climbed back to the blasted ledge, to the stone wall. The distraction, the moment to recover from the daggers, was all Brunner needed. He came in hard again, his many notched axe smashing the Drider's closest leg. His shield up high to block the now off-balance axe swipes. The dwarf pressed right into the beast, using its bulk to offer him some cover from the enemies in the corridor, and bowled it backward before it could set its many legs against the charge. Another of Catibree's arrows whipped past him, sparking as it ricocheted along the stone of the corridor. Brunner grinned widely, thankful that the gods had delivered to him an ally and friend as competent as Catibree. The first two arrows enraged Vierna. The third, coming down the corridor, nearly took off her head. Jarlaxle raced back from his position near the chamber's entrance to join her. "Formidable," the mercenary admitted. "I have dead soldiers in the room." Vierna raced forward, focusing in on the dwarf battling her mutated brother. "Where is Drizdo Erden?" she demanded, using magic to focus her voice so that Brunner would hear her through the Drider.
"You hit me, and you're meaning to talk?"
the dwarf howled, finishing his sentence with an exclamation point in the form of a chopping axe. One of Denon's legs fell free, and the dwarf barreled on, pushing the unbalanced Drider back another few strides. Vierna hardly had the chance to begin her intended spell before Jarlaxle grabbed her and hauled her down. Her instinctive anger toward the mercenary was lost in the blast of yet another streaking arrow, this one driving a hole into the stone wall where the priestess had been standing. Vierna remembered Entreri's warning about this group, had the evidence right before her as the battle continued to sour. She trembled with rage, growled indecipherably as she considered what the defeat might cost her. Her thoughts fell inward, followed the path of her faith toward her dark deity, and cried out to Lolth.
"Vierna!"
Jarlaxle called from some place remote. Lolth could not allow her to fail, had to help her against this unexpected obstacle, that she might deliver the sacrifice.
"Vierna!"
She felt the mercenary's hands on her, felt the hands of a second drow helping Jarlaxle put her back on her feet.
"Wisha!"
came her unintentional cry. Then she knew only calm, knew that Lolth had answered her call. Jarlaxle and the other drow slammed against the tunnel's walls from the force of Vierna's magical outburst. Each looked at her with trepidation. The mercenary's features relaxed when Vierna bade him to follow her farther along the corridor, out of harm's way. "Lolth will help us finish what we have started here," the priestess explained. Catibree put another arrow into the corridor for good measure, then glanced about, searching for a more apparent target.
She studied the battle between Brunner and the monstrous Dryder, but she knew that any shots she made at the bloated monster would be too risky given the furious melee. Wulfgar apparently had his situation under control. A drow lay dead at his feet as he peeked about the rubble of the collapsed corridor in search of the enemy who had not come in. Pwent was nowhere to be found. Catty Bree looked up to the blasted ledge above Brunner and the Dryder for the drow who had not fallen, then to the other ledge where Guinevere had disappeared. In a small alcove below that area, the young woman saw a curious sight. A gathering of mists similar to that heralding the panther's approach. The cloud shifted colors, became orange, almost like a swirling ball of flames. Catty Bree sensed an evil aura, gathering and overwhelming, and put her bow in line. The hairs on the back of her neck tingled. Something was watching her. Catty Bree dropped the Heartseeker and spun about, snapping her short sword from its sheath with her turn, barely in time to bat aside the thrusting sword of a levitating drow that had silently descended from the ceiling. Wulfgar too noticed the mist, and he knew that it demanded his attention, that he must be ready to strike out at it as soon as its nature was revealed. He could not ignore Catty Bree's sudden cry, though, and when he looked at her, he found her hard-pressed, nearly sitting on the floor, her short sword working furiously to keep her attacker at bay. In the shadows, some distance behind the young woman and her attacker, another dark shape began its descent. The warm blood of his torn enemy mingled with the drool on Thibaldorf Puent's beard. The drow had stopped thrashing, but Puent, reveling in the kill, had not. A crossbow quarrel pierced his ear. His head came up as he roared, the impaled helmet spike lifting the dead drow's arm weirdly. There stood another enemy, advancing steadily. Up leaped the battle rager, snapping his head from side to side, whipping the caught drow back and forth until the ebony skin ripped apart, freeing the helmet spike. The approaching dark elf stopped his advance, trying to make some sense of the gruesome scene. He was moving again, back the other way, when indomitable Puent took up the roaring charge. The drow was truly amazed at the stubby dwarf's frantic pace, amazed that he could not easily outdistance this enemy. He wouldn't have run too far anyway, though, preferring to bait this dangerous one away from the main battle. They went through a series of twisting corridors, the dark elf 10 strides ahead. His graceful steps barely seemed to alter as he leaped, landing and spinning about, sword ready and smile wide. Puent never slowed. He merely ducked his head to put his helmet spike in line. With his eyes to the stone, the battle rager realized the trap too late as he crossed the rim of a pit the drow had subtly leaped across. Down went the battle rager, crashing and bouncing, the many points of his battle armor throwing sparks as he skidded along the stone. He cracked a rib against the rounded top of a stalagmite mound some distance down, bounced completely over, and landed flat on his back in a lower chamber. He lay there for some time, admiring the cunning of his enemy, and admiring the curious way the ceiling, tons of solid rock, continued to spin about. No novice with a sword, Catty Bree worked her blade marvelously, using every defense Drisdo Erden had shown her to gain back some measure of equal footing. She was confident that the drow's initial advantage was fading, confident that she could get her feet under her and come back up evenly against this opponent. Then, suddenly, she had no one to fight. Aegis Fang twirled by her, its windy wake bringing her thick hair about, and hit the surprised dark elf full force, blasting him away. Catty Bree spun about, her initial appreciation lost as soon as she recognized Wulfgar's protectiveness. The mist near the barbarian was forming by then, taking on the substantial, corporeal body of a denizen of some vile lower plane, some enemy far more dangerous than the dark elf Catty Bree had been battling. Wulfgar had come to her aid at the risk of his own peril, had put her safety above his own. To Catty Bree, confident that she could have taken care of her own situation, that act seemed more stupid than altruistic. Caddybree went for her bow. She had to get to her bow. Before she even had her hands on it, though, the monster, the Yochlul, came fully to the plain. Amorphous, it somewhat resembled a lump of half-melted wax, showing 8 tentacle-like appendages and a central gaping maw lined with long, sharp teeth. Caddybree sensed danger behind her. Before she could call out to Wulfgar, she spun bow in hand and looked up to her enemy, to a drow's sword fast descending for her head. Caddybree shot first. The arrow jolted the drow several inches from the floor and passed right through the dark elf to explode in a shower of sparks against the ceiling. The drow was still standing when he came back to the floor, still holding his sword, his expression revealing that he was not quite sure what had just happened. Caddybree grabbed her bow like a club and jumped up to meet him, pressing him fiercely until his mind registered the fact that he was dead. She looked back once to see Wulfgar grabbed by one of the Yochlul's tentacles, then another. All the barbarian's incredible strength could not keep him from the waiting maw. Brunner could see nothing but the black of the Drider's torso as he continued to bull in, continued to drive Deenan backward. He could hear nothing except the sounds of flying blades, the clang of metal against metal, or the sound of cracking shell whenever his axe struck home. He knew instinctively that Caddybree and Wulfgar, his children, were in trouble. Brunner's axe finally caught up with the retreating creature with full force as the Drider slammed against the wall. Another spider leg fell away. Brunner planted his feet and heaved with all his strength, launching himself several feet back. Deenan, weirdly contorted, two legs lost, did not immediately pursue, glad for the reprieve. The ferocious Brunner came back in, the dwarf's savagery overwhelming the wounded Drider. Brunner's shield blocked the first axe, his helmet blocked the following strike, a blow that should have dropped him. Straight across whipped the dwarf's many-notched axe, above the hard exoskeleton, to cut a jagged line across the bloated Drider's belly. Hot gore spewed out, fluids ran down the Drider's legs and Brunner's pumping arms. Brunner went into a frenzy, his axe smacking repeatedly, incessantly, into the crook between the Drider's two foremost legs. Exoskeleton gave way to flesh, flesh opened to spill more gore. Brunner's axe struck hard yet again, but he took a hit atop the shoulder of his weapon arm. The Drider's awkward angle stole most of the strength from the blow, and the axe did not get through Brunner's fine mithril mail, but a blast of hot agony assaulted Brunner. His mind screamed that Caddybree and Wulfgar needed him. Grimacing against the pain, Brunner whipped his axe in an upward backhand, its flat back cracking against the Drider's elbow. The creature howled, and Brunner brought the weapon to bear again, angled up the other way, catching the Drider in the armpit and shearing the creature's arm off. Caddybree and Wulfgar needed him. The Drider's longer reach got its second axe around the dwarf's blocking shield, its bottom edge drawing a line of blood up the back of Brunner's arm. Brunner tucked the shield in close and shoulder-blocked the monster against the wall. He bounced back, drove his axe in hard at the monster's exposed side, then shoulder-blocked again. Back bounced the dwarf, in chopped his axe, and Brunner's stubby legs twitched again, sending him hurtling forward. This time, Brunner heard the Drider's other axe fall to the floor, and when he bounced back, he stayed back, chopping wildly with his axe, driving the Drider to the stone, splitting flesh and breaking ribs. Brunner turned about, saw Caddybree in command of her situation, and took a step toward Wulfgar. Wisha! Waves of energy hit the dwarf, lifting his feet from the ground and launching him a dozen feet through the air to slam against the wall. He rebounded in a redirected run, and he cried a single note of rage as he bore down on the entrance to the distant tunnel, the eyes of several drow watching him from farther within. Wisha! Came the cry once more, and Brunner was moving backward suddenly.
How many ye got?
The tough dwarf roared, shrugging off this newest hit against the wall. The eyes, every set, turned away. A globe of darkness fell over the dwarf, and he was, in truth, glad for its cover, for that last slam had hurt him more than he cared to admit. A fourth soldier joined Vierna, Jarlaxle, and their one bodyguard as they again moved deeper into the tunnels.
"Dwarf to the side," the newcomer explained. "Insane, wild with rage. I put him down a pit, but I doubt he has stopped."
Vierna began to reply, but Jarlaxle interrupted her, pointing down a side passage to yet another drow signaling to them frantically in the silent hand code.
"Devil cat," the distant drow signaled.
A second form rushed by him, followed by a third a few seconds later. Jarlaxle understood the movement of his troops, knew that these three were the survivors of two separate battles, and understood that both the ledge and the side passage below it had been lost.
"We must go," he signaled to Vierna.
"Let us find a more advantageous region where we might continue this fight."
"Loth has answered my call," Vierna growled at him. "A handmaiden has arrived."
"More the reason to be gone," Jarlaxle replied aloud. "Show your faith in the Spider Queen, and let us be on with the hunt for your brother." Vierna considered the words for just a moment, then, to the worldly mercenary's relief, nodded her agreement. Jarlaxle led her along at a great pace, wondering if it could be that only seven of his skilled Bregan de Earth force, himself and Vierna included, remained. Wulfgar's arms slapped wildly at the waving tentacles. His hands clasped over those appendages wrapping him, trying to break free of their iron grip. More tentacles slapped in at him, forcing his attention. He was jerked out straight, yanked sidelong into the great maw, and he understood these newest slapping attacks to be merely diversions. Razor-edged teeth dug into his back and ribs, tore through muscle, and scraped against bone. He punched out and grabbed a handful of slimy, yuckle skin, twisting and tearing a hunk free. The creature did not react, continued to bite bone, razor teeth working back and forth across the trapped torso. Aegis Fang came back to Wolfgar's hand, but he was twisted awkwardly for any hits against his enemy. He swung anyway, connecting solidly, but the fleshy, rubbery hide of the evil creature seemed to absorb the blows, sinking deep beneath the weight of Aegis Fang. Wulfgar swung again, twisted about despite the searing pain. He saw Catti Bree standing free, the second drow lying dead at her feet, and her face locked in an expression of open horror as she stared at the white of Wulfgar's exposed ribs. Still, the image of his love, free from harm, brought a grimace of satisfaction to the barbarian's face. A bolt of silver flashed right below, startling Wulfgar, blasting the Yoklul, and the barbarian thought his salvation at hand, thought that his beloved Catti Bree, the woman he had dared to underestimate, would strike his attacker down. A tentacle wrapped around Catti Bree's ankles and jerked her from her feet. Her head hit the stone hard, her precious bow fell from her grasp, and she offered little resistance as the Yoklul began to pull her in.
"No!" Wulfgar roared, and he whacked again and again futilely at the rubbery beast.
He cried out for Brunner. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the dwarf stumble out of a dark globe, far away and dazed. The Yoklul's maw crunched mercilessly. A lesser man would have long since collapsed under the force of that bite. Wulfgar could not allow himself to die, though, not with Catti Bree and Brunner in danger. He began a hearty song to Tempest, his god of battle. He sang with lungs fast filling with blood, with a voice that came from a heart that had pumped mightily for more than 20 years. He sang, and he forgot the waves of crippling pain. He sang, and the song came back to his ears, echoing from the cavern walls like a chorus from the minions of an approving god. He sang, and he tightened his grip on Aegis Fang. Wulfgar struck out, not against the beast, but against the alcove's low ceiling. The hammer chopped through dirt, hooked about stone. Pebbles and dust fell all around the barbarian and his attacker. Again and again, all the while singing, Wulfgar slammed at the ceiling. The Yoklul, not a stupid beast, bit fiercely, shook its great maw wildly, but Wulfgar had passed beyond the admission of pain.
Aegis Fang chopped upward. A chunk of stone followed its inevitable descent. As soon as she recovered her wits, Catti Bree saw what the barbarian was doing. The Yokla was no longer interested in her, was no longer pulling her in, and she managed to claw her way back to her bow.
"No, me boy!" she heard Brunner cry from across the way.
Catti Bree knocked an arrow and turned about. Aegis Fang slammed against the ceiling. Catti Bree's arrow sizzled into the Yokla an instant before the ceiling gave way. Huge boulders toppled down. Any space between them quickly filled with piles of rock and soil, spewing clouds of dust into the air. The chamber shook violently. The collapse resounded through all the tunnels. Neither Catti Bree nor Brunner still stood. Both huddled on the floor, their arms defensively over their heads as the cave-in slowly ended. Neither could see amid the darkness and the dust. Neither could see that both the monster and Wulfgar had disappeared under tons of collapsing stone.
Part 5. Endgame. When I die, I have lost friends, lost my father, my mentor, to that greatest of mysteries called death. I have known grief since the day I left my homeland, since the day wicked malice informed me that Zacnaphane had been given to the Spider Queen. It is a strange emotion, grief, its focus shifting. Do I grieve for Zacnaphane, for Montolio, for Wulfgar? Or do I grieve for myself, for the loss I must forever endure? It is perhaps the most basic question of mortal existence, yet it is one for which there can be no answer, unless the answer is one of faith. I am sad still when I think of the sparring games against my father, when I remember the walks beside Montolio through the mountains, and when those memories of Wulfgar, most intense of all, flash through my mind like a summary of the last several years of my life. I remember a day on Kelvin's Cairn, looking out over the tundra of Icewind Dale, when young Wulfgar and I spotted the campfires of his nomadic people. That was the moment when Wulfgar and I truly became friends. The moment when we came to learn that, for all the other uncertainties in both our lives, we would have each other. I remember the white dragon, Icing Death, and the giant kin, Bigrin, and how, without heroic Wulfgar at my side, I would have perished in either of those fights. I remember, too, sharing the victories with my friend, our bond of trust and love tightening, close but never uncomfortable. I was not there when he fell, could not lend him the support he certainly would have lent me. I could not say farewell. When I die, will I be alone? If not for the weapons of monsters or the clutch of disease, I surely will outlive Catti Bree and Regis, even Brunner. At this time in my life, I do firmly believe that, no matter who else might be beside me, if those three were not, I would indeed die alone. These thoughts are not so dark. I have said farewell to Wulfgar 1,000 times. I have said it every time I let him know how dear he was to me, every time my words or actions affirmed our love. Farewell is said by the living, in life, every day. It is said with love and friendship, with the affirmation that the memories are lasting if the flesh is not. Wulfgar has found another place, another life. I have to believe that, else what is the point of existence? My very real grief is for me, for the loss I know I will feel to the end of my days, however many centuries have passed. But within that loss is a serenity, a divine calm. Better to have known Wulfgar and shared those very events that now fuel my grief than never to have walked beside him, fought beside him, looked at the world through his crystal blue eyes. When I die, may there be friends who will grieve for me, who will carry our shared joys and pains, who will carry my memory. This is the immortality of the spirit, the ever-lingering legacy, the fuel of grief. But so too, the fuel of faith. Drizzt Do'Urden. Chapter 20. Suddenly. Dust continued to settle in the wide chamber, dulling the flickering light. One of the torches had been extinguished beneath a falling chunk of stone, its glow snuffed out in the blink of an eye. Snuffed out, like the light in Wulfgar's eyes. When the rumbling finally stopped, when the larger pieces of collapsed ceiling settled, Catti Bree turned herself about and managed to sit up, facing the rubble-filled alcove. She wiped the dirt from her eyes, blinked through the gloom for several long moments before the grim truth of the scene registered fully. The monster's one visible tentacle, still wrapped about the young woman's ankle, had been cleanly severed, its back edge near the rubble twitching reflexively. Beyond it, there was only piled rock. The enormity of the situation overwhelmed Catti Bree. She swayed to the side, nearly swooned, finding her strength only when a burst of anger and denial welled up within her. She tore her feet free of the tentacle and scrambled ahead on all fours. She tried to stand, but her head throbbed, keeping her low. Again came the wave of weak nausea, the invitation to fall back into unconsciousness. Wulfgar! Catti Bree crawled on, slapped aside the twitching tentacle, and began digging into the stone pile with her bare hands, scraping her skin and tearing a fingernail painfully. How similar this collapse seemed to the one that had taken Drizzt on the companion's first crossing of Mithril Hall. But that had been a dwarf-designed trap, a rigged fall that dropped out the floor as it had dropped out a ceiling block, sending Drizzt careening safely into a lower corridor. This was no rigged trap, Catti Bree reminded herself. There was no chute to a lower chamber. A soft groan, a whimper escaped her lips, and she clawed on, desperate to get Wulfgar from the crushing pile, praying that the rocks had collapsed in an angle that would allow the barbarian to survive. Then Brunner was beside her, dropping his axe and shield to the floor and going at the pile with abandon. The powerful dwarf managed to move several large stones aside, but when the outer rim of the cave-in had been cleared, he stopped his work and stood staring blankly at the pile. Catti Bree kept digging, didn't notice her father's frown. After more than 2 centuries of mining, Brunner understood the truth. The collapse was complete. The lad was gone. Catti Bree continued to dig and to sniffle as her mind began to tell her what her heart continued to deny. Brunner put his hand on her arm to stop her from her pointless work, and when she looked up at him, her expression broke through the tough dwarf's heart. Her face was grime-covered, blood was caked on one cheek, and her hair was matted to her head. Brunner then saw only Catti Bree's eyes, doe-like orbs of deepest blue, glistening with moisture. Brunner slowly shook his head. Catti Bree fell back to a sitting position, her bleeding hands limp in her lap, her eyes unblinking. How many times had she and her friends come so close to this final point, she wondered. How many times had they escaped death's greedy clutches at the last instant? The odds had caught up to them, had caught up to Wulfgar, here and now, suddenly, without warning. Gone was the mighty fighter, leader of his tribe, the man Catti Bree had intended to marry. She, Brunner, even mighty Drisdo Erden, could do nothing to help him, nothing to change what had happened. "He saved me," the young woman whispered. Brunner seemed not to hear her. The dwarf continually wiped at the dust in his eyes, at the dust that collected in the large teardrops that gathered and then slipped down, streaking his dirty cheeks. Wulfgar had been like a son to Brunner. The tough dwarf had taken the young Wulfgar, just a boy back then, into his home after a battle, ostensibly as a slave, but in truth to teach the lad a better way. Brunner had molded Wulfgar into a man who could be trusted, a man of honest character. The happiest day in the dwarf's life, even happier than the day Brunner had reclaimed Mithril Hall, was the day Wulfgar and Catti Bree had announced they would wed. Brunner kicked a heavy stone, the force of his blow shifting it aside. There lay Aegis Fang. The brave dwarf's knees went weak at the sight of the marvelous warhammer's head, etched with the symbols of Dumathoin, a dwarven god, the keeper of secrets under the mountain. Brunner forced deep breaths into his lungs and tried to steady himself for a long while before he could manage the strength to reach down and work the hammer free of the rubble. It had been Brunner's greatest creation, the epitome of his considerable smithing abilities. He had put all of his love and skill into forging the hammer. He had made it for Wulfgar. Catti Bree's semi-stoic front collapsed like the ceiling at the sight of the weapon. Quiet sobs made her shoulders bob, and she trembled, seeming frail in the dim, dusty light. Brunner found his own strength in watching her display. He reminded himself that he was the eighth king of Mithril Hall, that he was responsible for his subjects, and for his daughter. He slipped the precious warhammer into the strap of his traveling pack, and hooked an arm under Catti Bree's shoulder, hoisting her to her feet.
"We can't do a thing for the boy," Brunner whispered.
Catti Bree pulled away from him and moved back to the pile, growling as she tossed several smaller stones aside. She could see the futility of it all, could see the tons of dirt and stones, many of them too large to be moved, filling the alcove. But Catti Bree dug anyway, simply incapable of giving up on the barbarian. No other apparent course offered any hope. Brunner's hands gently closed about her upper arms. With a snarl, the young woman shrugged him away and resumed her work.
"No!"
Brunner roared, and he grabbed her again forcefully, lifting her from the ground and hauling her back from the pile. He put her down hard, with his wide shoulders squared between her and the pile, and whichever way Catti Bree went to get around him, Brunner shuffled to block her.
"Ye can't do a thing!"
he shouted into her face a dozen times.
"I've got to try,"
she finally pleaded with him, when it became obvious to her that Brunner was not going to let her back to the digging. Brunner shook his head. Only the tears in his dark eyes, his obvious distress, prevented Catti Bree from punching him in the face. She did calm down then, stopped trying to slip past the stubborn dwarf.
"It's over," Brunner said to her. "But boy, me boy, choose this course. He gave himself for us, yourself and me. Don't ye do him the dishonor of letting stupid pains keep ye here in danger."
Catti Bree's body seemed to slump at the undeniable truth of Brunner's reasoning. She did not move back to the pile, to Wulfgar's burial cairn, as Brunner retrieved his shield and axe. The dwarf came back to her and draped one arm about her back.
"Say your goodbyes," he offered.
And he silently waited a moment before leading Catti Bree away, first to her bow, then from the chamber, toward the same entrance through which they had come. Daddy Breeze stopped beside him, and regarded him and the tunnel curiously, as if questioning their course.
"Pwent and the cattle have to find their own way about,"
Brunner answered her blank stare, misunderstanding her confusion. Catti Bree wasn't worried about Guinevar. She knew that nothing could bring the panther serious harm while she still possessed the magical figurine, and she wasn't worried about the missing battle rager at all.
"What about Drazed?"
she asked simply.
"Me guess is that the elf's alive,"
Brunner answered with confidence.
"One of them drow asked me about him, asked me where he was at. He's alive, and he's got away from them, and by me own figuring, Drizzt's got a better chance of getting clear of these tunnels than the two of us. Might be that the cat's with him even now."
"And it might be that he needs us,"
Catti Bree argued, pulling free of Brunner's gentle touch. She flipped the bow over her shoulder and crossed her arms over her chest, her face grim and determined.
"We're going home, girl," Brunner ordered sternly. "We're not for knowing where Drizzt might be. I'm only guessing and hoping that he really is alive."
"Are ye willing to take the chance?" Catti Bree asked simply. "Are ye willing to risk that he's needing us? We lost one friend, maybe two if the assassin finished off Regis. I'm not for giving up on Drizzt, not for any risk."
She winced as another memory flashed through her mind. A memory of being lost on Tartarus, another plane of existence, when Drizzt O'Erden had bravely faced unspeakable horrors to bring her home.
"Ye remember Tartarus,"
she said to Brunner. And the thought made the helpless feeling dwarf blink and turn away.
"I'm not giving up,"
Catti Bree said again, "not for any risk." She looked to the tunnel entrance across the way, where the escaping dark elves apparently had taken flight.
"Not for any damned dark elves and their hell-spawned friends."
Brunner stayed quiet for a long while, thinking of Wolfgar, milling over his daughter's determined words. Drizzt might be about, might be hurt, might be caught again. If it was Brunner lost down there and Drizzt up here, the dwarf had no doubt which course Drizzt would choose. He looked again at Catti Bree and at the pile behind her. He had just lost Wolfgar. How could he risk losing Catti Bree as well? Brunner looked more closely at Catti Bree, saw the seething determination in her eyes.
"That's me girl,"
the dwarf said quietly. They retrieved the remaining torch and left through the exit on the opposite side of the chamber, moved deeper into the tunnels in search of their missing friend. One who had not been raised in the perpetual gloom of the Underdark would not have noticed the subtle shift in the depth of the darkness, the slight tingling breeze of fresher air. To Drizzt, the changes came as obviously as a slap across the face, and he picked up his pace, hoisting Regis tight to his side.
"What is it?"
the scared halfling demanded, glancing about as if he expected Artemis and Treri to jump out of the nearest shadows and devour him. They passed a wide but low side passage, sloping upward. Drizzt hesitated, his direction sense screaming to him that he had just passed the correct tunnel. He ignored those silent pleas, though, and continued on, hopeful that the opening to the outside world would be accessible enough for him and Regis to get a welcome breath of fresh air. It was. They rounded a bend in the tunnel and felt the chilly burst of wind in their faces, saw a lighter opening ahead, and saw beyond it towering mountains and stars. The halfling's profound sigh of relief echoed Drizzt's sentiments perfectly as he carried Regis on. When they came out of the tunnel, both of them were nearly overcome by the splendor of the mountainous scene spread wide before them,
by the sheer beauty of the surface world under the stars, so removed from the starless nights of the Underdark. The wind, rushing past them, seemed a vital and alive entity. They were on a narrow ledge, two-thirds of the way to the bottom of a steep 1,000-foot cliff. A narrow path wound up to their right, down to their left, but at only a slight angle, which offered little hope that it would continue long enough to get them either up or down the cliff. Drizzt considered the towering wall. He knew he could easily manage the few 100 feet to the bottom, could probably get up to the top without too much trouble, but he didn't think he'd be able to bring Regis with him, and didn't like the prospect of being in an unknown stretch of wilderness, not knowing how long it might take him to get back to Mithril Hall. His friends, not so far away, were in trouble.
"Keeper's Dale is up there,"
Regis remarked hopefully, pointing to the northwest. "Probably no more than a few miles." Drizzt nodded, but replied, "We have to go back in." While Regis did not seem pleased by that prospect, he did not argue, understanding that he could not get off this ledge in his present condition. "Well done," came in Treri's voice from up around the bend. The assassin's dark silhouette came into sight, the jewels of his belted dagger glimmering like his heat-seeing eyes. "I knew you would come to this place," he explained to Drizzt. "I knew you would sense the clean air and make for it." "Do you congratulate me or yourself?" the drow ranger asked. "Both," Entreri replied with a hearty laugh. The white of his teeth disappeared, replaced by a cold frown as he continued to approach. "The tunnel you passed 50 yards back will indeed take you to the higher level, where you'll likely find your friends, your dead friends, no doubt." Drizzt didn't take the bait, didn't let his rage send him charging ahead. "But you cannot get there, can you?" Entreri teased. "You alone could keep ahead of me, could avoid the fight I demand. But alas for your wounded companion. Think of it, Drizzt O'Erden. Leave the halfling and you can run free." Drizzt didn't justify the absurd thought with a reply. "I would leave him," Entreri remarked, dropping his cold glare over Regis as he spoke. The halfling gave a curious whimper and slumped under the strong hold of Drizzt's arm. Drizzt tried not to imagine the horrors Regis had suffered in Entreri's vile hands. "You will not leave him," Entreri continued. "We long ago established that difference between us. The difference you call strength, but that I know to be weakness." He was only a dozen strides away. His slender sword hissed free of its scabbard, illuminating him in its blue-green glow. "And so to our business," he said. "And so to our destiny. Do you like the battlefield I have prepared? The only way off this ledge is the tunnel behind you, and so I, like yourself, cannot flee, must play it out to the end." He looked over the cliff as he spoke. "A deadly drop for the loser," he explained, smiling. "A fight with no reprieve." Drizzt could not deny the sensations that came over him, the heat in his breast and behind his eyes. He could not deny that in some repressed corner of his heart and soul he wanted this challenge, wanted to prove Entreri wrong, to prove the assassin's existence to be worthless. Still,